Hello, and welcome to Dear Hank and John.
In other words, I prefer to think of it Dear John and Hank.
It's a comedy podcast where me and my brother John answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. How you doing, John?
I'm doing well, thank you. I just received in the mail 378 Tumblr stickers from Tumblr.
Oh, wow. And actually from Tumblr.
From Tumblr itself. And I feel like this 378 things joke has gone a little bit too far.
We got to back away from it, Hank. What are you going to do with 378 stickers? Give me something I can eat, Tumblr.
Yeah, well...
Tumblr candy bars. Some Tumblr Hot Pockets.
You know...
Some Tumblr salad dressing.
When I think about the places where Tumblr needs to expand and change, I do think about food first. They need to get in the Hot Pocket business because I just feel like the current Hot Pocket business is not being well served by only having one brand in it.
I do not see enough social media representation at the grocery store. What is that about? Why are there not Twitter, what are those things called? TV dinners. Twitter TV dinners. That's what I want.
Mm-hmm. They're all 140 calories each.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I mean, one of the things I really like about having you as my brother, Hank, is that even when I have kind of very mediocre ideas, you're wonderfully excited about them, and I really appreciate that.
Oh, well, I got really excited. I think Twitter's missing out on a huge opportunity.
I agree. The biggest problem that Twitter has is not being in the TV dinners business. Hank, would you like a short poem for today?
Before we do that, John, I have to say that you got your stickers from Tumblr, but from two different sets of fans of the pod, I've gotten candy, and one was the Orions, the weird Irish potatoes that have no potato in them, and now I have received, just because you are always getting the good stuff, and people feel bad for me, I assume, I just got 378 peanut butter cups.
What?
Not from Reese's. Just from people who want me to feel better about my lack of good candy.
Man, that's not fair. I love Reese's Cups.
I know, they're good. But do you know what, John? Do you know what? I have put them out for all of the staff at Complexly Missoula to enjoy. Unlike your policy with your poor people in Indianapolis who just got to look at and not touch the Snickers.
Okay. don't try to paint me as a bad guy just because I wanted to enjoy all 378 of the Snickers that the Snickers company sent to me personally.
We're different people. That's all I can say. Do you have a short poem for us today?
That's not at all fair. I am a fantastic person who just happens to love Snickers. And also, I would not ask for someone else's Snickers. You know, I believe that in this world, a human being has to pull themselves up by the bootstraps and without any help, find their own Snickers in this world. You know, we've all got an equal shot at Snickers,
Hank.
There's
also the fact that if I had 378 Reese's Peanut Butter Cups in my home, that next week I would have about 50, but I would have serious digestive issues. So
yeah,
I do need help with this problem. It is a bit of a problem to have that many Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
I would say that, you know, some people would construct it as a problem. Other people would construct it as an opportunity. Here's a short poem. It's by Bill Knott, a poet I've gotten really into since he died. I feel bad because it's so cliche to get into poets right after they die. But I didn't know about him until he died. Anyway, this poem is called Alternative Fates, and I really love it. What if right in the middle of a battle, across the battlefield, the wind blew thousands of lottery tickets? What then? What then, Hank?
Like scratch-off tickets? Like they're not done? Are they winning lottery tickets? Or are like that have been like? Or are they just like, okay, everybody has to get their coins out to see if you won?
Well, I think almost by definition they can't all be winning lottery tickets. Then it's not a lottery; it's just a straight cash giveaway.
That would be more expensive than the actual war. I think.
Probably not. wars are astonishingly expensive.
That's a good point, John. All right, what do we got in the way of questions from our listeners this fine day on Dear Hank and John?
Well, this first question comes from Danny, who writes, Dear Green Brothers, anytime I cook something in the oven that requires a covering of aluminum foil, I notice that even after 40-plus minutes of exposure to extreme heat, the foil is barely even warm when I remove it. This is weird. Isn't metal supposed to be a good conductor? Should not the foil be just as hot as the metal dish in which my delicious lasagna is being cooked? Is everything I learned in my chemistry courses about conductors and insulators a lie? Any dubious explanation is appreciated. Victory for the forces of democracy. Danny. I feel like I just was asked to participate in propaganda by reading the sign-off. I've been tricked, Hank.
Yeah, you guys, you're not getting 100%... read of sign-offs. We will skip them sometimes if we find them controversial enough, but not that one. Victory for the forces of democracy, John.
Mightn't democracy have been overrated?
Do you not like the frame that victory for the forces of anything, really? Like, maybe we shouldn't be framing things that way? Or is it
I wouldn't mind, victory in the war. Let's move on.
So, Danny, to your question, if you were listening extra hard in your chemistry / physics classes, you would know one extra thing about heat, which is that it's there, but it is also it is only there in the amount that it can be there. So if I have a piece of lead that's 30 pounds and it is uniformly heated to 450 degrees or whatever your oven was at, then that object has a ton of heat inside of it. It isn't just a temperature, it also contains a lot of heat. And then if I have a feather that I have, well, that's a bad example because it's going to catch fire at 450 degrees probably. But if I have something that is very light that I heat up to the same temperature, then that will be the same temperature, but it will contain less heat. So when you're talking about this tinfoil is very light, it's very thin. So when you touch it, you are actually touching something that's 450 degrees, but all of that heat immediately, it just isn't enough to heat your finger up very much.
What?
So it's going into your finger. There's just not enough heat to change the temperature of your finger dramatically.
No, there is no... I thought it was because aluminum is something special and different from other metals. There is no way that is the answer.
That is the answer.
Shut the front door.
So, yeah. I even looked it up because I wanted to make sure.
I mean, you know what, Hank? I support you. And as you know, I'm a huge fan of science. Victory for the forces of science. However... There's no way that's true. Danny, it's because aluminum foil is different from other metals. That's why. And nobody knows how it's different or why it's different, but it is.
Okay. Well, just because you don't agree doesn't mean it's not true, but we'll move on.
Hank, if I've learned anything from recent American history, it's that if you believe something, that is legitimate, no matter what, even if it's wrong. It is as legitimate as a right opinion, because opinions are just opinions and everyone has them, and facts are just facts, and there might be alternative facts that contradict your facts, and there's a lot of data out there and the data isn't clear, and aluminum foil is special and different and you just don't understand it, or maybe science doesn't understand it yet because it's so complicated and interesting that science hasn't been able to grasp it.
All
so
right.
Let's move on.
Questions from John, who asks, Dear Hank and John, I'm a delivery man, and I started giving people reminders of their mortality along with my pizza. Am I good? It could happen at any time, John.
No, you're not good.
You're not good, man.
Nope. You are on the wrong side of history, friend. Here's my issue with this, Hank.
I mean, do you just have one?
I have one issue.
Okay.
All right, I want you to imagine a pizza delivery situation in which you open the door, you hand the money for the pizza is handed back to you, and then somebody says, you could die at any moment. What I'm going to take from that is not a helpful reminder of my mortality. I'm going to assume that I am about to be murdered.
Yep. I mean, I also want to know how this message is being delivered. It's very vague. Like,
are you being super subtle? Because even if you're saying, if you look at me at the end of a pizza exchange and you just, even if you say it could happen at any time, I'm going to spend the next like 6 years freaked out over like, what is it?
I like to imagine that there's just like, before he puts the pizza in the box, John just writes a little message, just it could happen at any time, like very small under the, and so you're like 99% of people aren't noticing it, but like somebody takes that last piece of pizza and then they're like, what is that? What is that? What is it? What does it mean? What the pizza? What is the pizza box trying to tell me?
John, you have to stop doing this. This is, big concern for me.
Yeah, no, I definitely will not order a pizza again from a restaurant that delivers with a pizza delivery man who is also delivering a message of my own mortality. Like, it's just,
yeah,
like,
I mean, have you not noticed like a dramatic decrease in repeat customers?
Reminders of their mortality along with pizza. I mean, if there's any time, like, I understand that we should be aware of the finite nature of our existence. But
yeah,
also,
that's why we have sundials.
I'm about to have a pizza. I don't need this right now. Like, I've already made a mistake today. I'm already indulging myself.
Hey, stop right there. Stop right there. All right. Hank, you and I have both now said stupid things in this podcast that we just need to stop and apologize for. First off, I expressed an opposition to democracy. I would like to take that back.
Okay.
I am hard in favor of democracy. I don't know where that came from. And then now, having said that, Hank, I want to give you an opportunity to take back the horrible, disgusting, reprehensible thing you just said about pizza.
I take it back. I do not want to shame myself or anyone else for the enjoyment of the perfect thing that is pizza.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. All right. I feel like we're back to even now.
And you did that whole thing about aluminum foil and science being wrong, but whatever, we'll just ignore that.
Oh, I'm not walking away from that one. It seems like you must be wrong. I believe that you're right, but it also seems like you must be wrong, which, let's move on to another question, Hank. All right, actually, you know what? I'd like to formally apologize for saying that science is wrong.
Okay. Yeah, but
I don't know if people can read tone anymore in these dark and strange times, so I just want to be absolutely clear that I'm pro-science. This question comes from Emma, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, I have a distinct problem. For the first 16 years of my life, I thought my name was Emma. That's spelled E-M-M-A. However, upon my attempt to acquire a learner's permit, I found out that there was a clerical error on my birth certificate, making my legal name Emma. That is Emma spelled with three M's. E-M-M-M-A. To be clear, this spelling was not intended by my parents. However, they seem to find my mutant beast of a name absolutely hilarious and take every opportunity to remind me of it. Obviously, I am distraught. The problem with my name is causing an inordinate amount of anxiety for me. I mean, is it better now that we're laughing at you, Emma? And perhaps it's something philosophical about the teenage struggle for identity. No, I don't think it's that. I think it's maybe that your name is spelled E-M-M-M-A.
Oh, how is it pronounced though, John? How is Emma with three M's pronounced? Like, is it just
Don't
Emma?
Make it worse.
Or is it like...
Don't make it worse. Don't make it worse. I'm having a hard time figuring out if my fears are legitimate, thus I've turned to the pod. Oh, great idea. So, am I being too uptight? Should I pretend this clerical error never happened, or should I own the new spelling?
Well, I'm worried that it's going to end up on your driver's license, too. Like,
No, you should not own the new spelling. Jesus Christ.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, just like, hey, why is your name Emma with three M's? Oh, because like 16 years ago, somebody misread a form.
Okay, but John, I just want to point out that Emma signs off, the quality of mercy is not strained, Emma, or possibly Emma, but Rosianna has put the person's name at the top of the question, as she does, and has spelled it with three M's.
I mean, I believe it's pronounced Emma.
Emma?
Right? Emma?
Emma. I think it's just Emma.
Oh, that's what it is. You're absolutely right. Yeah. You have to settle more into the M. So it's like Emma. Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, by the way, that quote is from Shakespeare, and it's a very good sign off. Emma. It's really lovely. And so if nothing else, you've got a great sign-off going for you, which is a wonderful start. And then I think that probably the next step is, yeah, you should go ahead and legally change your name to the name that is your name, because the government should not get to decide how many M's are in your name. I don't want to sound like too much of a libertarian, Emma, but I do think that there are some places that the government should stay out of, including the number of M's in Emma.
Dude, I mean, dude, just stick with it. Stick with the three M's, because who else has that? Who else has that story? Everybody from now on is going to look at your driver's license and they're going to be like, I didn't know your name had three M's in it. And you're going to be like, funny story. And also, I was on this podcast and they told me to keep it. So I did. Though one of the brothers was wrong and he told me to change it. And I disobeyed him directly. And then I wrote a letter to Hank about how right he was and how great he is.
Not since I said that aluminum foil... Can't be judged by science, have I heard such dubiosity.
My God.
That's ludicrous. That's terrible advice. Emma, I mean, look, the thing is, Hank, she will have the story for the rest of her life.
No,
all she needs to do is, like, photocopy the birth certificate and keep it in her pocket.
You gotta
and,
have
like,
come
for the rest
natural.
Of her life, she's going to have a hilarious story. I mean, Hank is right, Emma, that this is a very funny story. Like, I understand that current you is really unhappy about this situation, and I don't blame you because it is an unpleasant situation to be in at the age of 16 when you're trying to get your driver's license. Future you is going to find this as funny as your parents do. And like, so there is, you need to hold on to some memories of Emma, but I don't think you need to hold on to the name as your name if you don't want to.
All right. I feel as if we have both made our cases. This next question comes from Cassandra with three S's. Dear Hank and John, recently me and my boyfriend broke up due to irreconcilable differences a couple of days ago. His name was Ryan, and I'm not even joking. I'm generally doing okay post-breakup. However, the situation has left me with a serious quandary. Who gets custody over the teddy bear we made together at Build-A-Bear? Cinnamon sticks and hockey pucks, Cassandra. Does he want it?
I mean, does anyone want
does
it?
Does anyone want
in
it?
In the long, long, long run, is this not a bear that would be best suited with an entirely new family?
I mean, have you seen the ending of Toy Story 3? That's where we're at here.
Yeah, I think we're in a Toy Story 3 kind of moment. No spoilers. And I think that maybe... Even in the medium run, it might not be that helpful for you to have the bear, and I don't think it would be that helpful for him to have the bear, but I do think it would be helpful for somebody to have the bear who could really love that bear and care for it.
In fact, if you the problem is you don't want to throw the bear away. Like, you don't want to say,
no.
You bear, I'll take the bear. Do you want to send me the bear? I'll pay for
no,
it.
No, Hank, you are not a good home for the bear. I guess you could give it to Oren. On the other hand, I would submit that Oren, among the world's children, is perhaps, you know...
yeah, bared up.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably reasonably bared up. So maybe donate the bear somewhere?
No, I feel like...
Can you donate
I feel like
bears?
Well, the thing is, it's like a custom bear. It's got, like, it's got memories of this particular situation inside of it. And, you know, people are... There's probably a surplus of Build-A-Bears that have memories attached to them that people feel a little bit weirded out by. But anybody who's listened to this podcast, I feel like they'll be aware enough of the story that they'll want to, you know, give the bear a good home and avoid any, you know, nasty custody battles.
Okay, so if you... listener, are in a situation where you need a bear, a Build-A-Bear bear, high-quality Build-A-Bear bear, available now. By the way, this person has not agreed to make her bear available, but Hank and I think it's the right thing to do. Let us know on the Patreon at patreon.com/DearHankandJohn. You can access it even if you don't donate. If you need a bear,
yeah,
and what you would need a bear for. And we, Cassandra, if you are ready to say goodbye to that bear, if this relationship is really over, and it sounds like it is, I think maybe if you're willing to give it up, and no pressure if you're not, we can find a good home for it.
The bear's name is Crawford, by the way. Crawford the Bear, made at Navy Pier in Chicago. It sounds like a lovely and sad story, but I think there are happy resolutions that can occur.
I agree. I am inclined to agree. It's still, it's a sad situation. I had a similar issue with an actual cat, not a stuffed cat, harder. But a live cat named Pants when my college girlfriend and I broke up. And the Pants situation still bugs me. Let's move on to another question from Rachel, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, I recently went out with some friends and the phrase came up, beer before liquor, never been sicker, liquor before beer, and you're in the clear. I feel like this is not actually a thing since it's just all ethanol, right? It simply depends on how much you drink. Have you experienced this phenomenon and do you think the saying is true? Still alive, Rachel." Well, I'm glad you didn't die of alcohol poisoning. Good Lord.
I mean, maybe that's just generally her sign-off, not to do with the specifics of this question.
I feel like as a sign-off, here's my issue with it as a sign-off, it is a little bit redundant.
Right, yes. Well, you are typing at the moment, so there is
that. That's my concern. You and I are going to answer this question differently because you presumably have done some like scientific research on it, whereas I have something more powerful than science called anecdote.
Hit me with that anecdote, buddy boy.
So, I've gone both ways, and my experience has been that if you drink a lot, you will feel sick, and you will feel sick the next day. And once you hit about the age of 37, you will also feel sick the day after the next day.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So don't drink to excess. And if you find yourself like regularly drinking to excess and not able to not drink to excess, you have to pursue not hangover remedies, but instead treatment options.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will. So there definitely isn't a lot of hard science here. There may be something to the fact that you might get a little more water with your drink if you are if you're drinking beer second, because maybe you drink longer. Because here's the thing. This is definitely a psychological thing more than it's a hard science thing. I think that when you are drunk, you drink more. So when you're not drunk...
That is definitely true.
So if you start with liquor, and then you're like, I'm a little bit drunk, and then you move over to beer, it's harder to get really, really drunk on at least, you know, your average American beer. I mean, it's super possible. Super possible.
Oh, it's not that hard.
But it's easier to know what you're drinking when you're drinking beer. Whereas when you're drinking liquor, you know, shots, like a shot glass of a slightly different size can have way more alcohol in it. A mixed drink can have way more alcohol in it. Like you don't really know how much alcohol is in a mixed drink. So I think it's easier to drink more when you're drinking liquor. I don't think it's impossible to drink a lot when you're drinking beer, but I think that is where this saying came from is that when you once you are drunk, if you switch to beer, you're getting a little bit more water with your drinking, and also you may not end up drinking as much as if you get a little bit drunk on beer and then you switch to liquor and start going way, way overboard and not knowing how overboard you're going because you're already drunk. So I think that's where it comes from, but like absolutely you can get super sick both ways, and so drink. Do not drink to excess because it's not fun, in my experience.
It's not as fun.
It's not.
No. A few years ago, my best friend Chris gave me a piece of advice that, to quote Gatsby, I forget the quote. I've been turning over in my mind ever since, I think. Anyway, the piece of advice was this. We were at a party. And I had a beer in my hand, and Chris looked at me, and he said, "You know what nobody ever regretted the next morning?" And I said, "What?" And he said, "Not having the last beer."
It's a great, great point. I want to thank Chris
but
for that.
But then if you follow that line of reasoning all the way down, you never have any beers.
Well, certainly in terms of regret. But it's good advice, especially when it comes to the last beer. I also want to thank John for really just cruising past the part where I called him Buddy Boy and not making a big deal out of my weird decision there.
I literally didn't hear that, but it's just one more example of how extremely dubious this entire episode of the pod has been. This question comes from Emily. Oh, wait, did I read the last one?
You did. This question comes from Ben, who asks, Dear Hank and John.
Poor Emily.
We'll get there. I was considering a YouTube Red subscription. However, I don't know if it's worth the money. I recently saw Hank go on a lengthy Twitter spree about YouTube Red. I'm nervous about the side effects. How much do creators make off of YouTube Red without ads? Ben.
Well, let me summarize quickly. We get a percentage of the revenue that you give to YouTube, and a YouTube Red viewer is definitely always worth more to a creator than a advertising supported user, like at least two or three times more. Although in the current environment with ad rates, I would say in the toilet is perhaps an understatement. Like whatever is below the toilet is the YouTube ad situation at the moment.
It's somewhere downstream
from the toilet is the YouTube ad situation.
You know, I think at this point it's kind of at the sewage treatment plant and they're trying to figure it out, trying to make it a little bit less gross before they start
That's
to rehab
exactly
it.
Correct. So I would say at this point, YouTube Red Viewer might be worth five to some creators, even 10 times as much as a as an ad-supported user. So certainly YouTube Red is good for creators.
Yeah, but also, like, if you know, if you don't know if it's worth the money for you, like, I think it should be worth the money for you.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you want to help creators, supporting them on Patreon goes way farther than even a YouTube Red subscription will.
Like 100 times further, yeah. I mean, I have YouTube Red because I like it and because an ad-free YouTube is worth it to me, and also because it comes free with a Google Play Music subscription, so I was able to get rid of my Spotify subscription, which I will never say again if Spotify just agrees to sponsor this podcast. However, until they do... I'm going to tell you the truth, which is that I got rid of Spotify for Google Play Music, and then I basically got YouTube Red for free. And I'm kind of confused why everyone doesn't do that, but maybe lots of people don't have paid subscriptions to Spotify. I'm not sure.
Which brings me to the fact that this podcast is brought to you, of course, by YouTube Red.
YouTube Red.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. No, it's like Spotify plus ad-free YouTube. That actually sounded like a proper sponsorship, Hank. That was as close as we'll ever get.
We didn't get paid for that. We did. We do kind of get paid.
Yeah, but indirectly.
But more to the case, this podcast is brought to you by Patreon, a place where you can support really great independent creators directly, and a very, very small percentage goes to the upkeep and maintenance of Patreon's actual business because they are really creator-focused, and they are great.
Patreon.com/DearHankandJohn. We've got to get rid of the actual sponsorships, though, Hank. Today's podcast is brought to you by Build-A-Bear Custody Battles. Build-A-Bear Custody Battles coming soon to a theater near you.
And this podcast is also brought to you by Messages of Mortality, which were brought to you by your pizza delivery man. Messages of Mortality, available now inside of your pizza. Apparently.
And most importantly, today's podcast is brought to you by the forces of democracy. The forces of democracy. Just to be absolutely clear, I am in favor of them.
Good. Okay. Whew. That was close.
All right. This question comes from Emily, who writes, Dear John and Hank, hey guys, okay, so I have this problem. My problem is that for as long as I can remember, my uncle has always greeted me by asking, Emily May, what the hey, every time he sees me.
Oh my God.
The rhyme itself is not a problem. In fact, I find it to be cute.
Okay.
My issue is that what the hey is just not a thing that people ask each other. What does it even mean? I'm not sure if it's even hey, like, you know, like hey, or hey as in hello. How am I supposed to answer this nonsensical question? What the hey, Emily?
John, do you know that here in Montana we have a thing called what the hey, which is where, I don't know if this is everywhere, where they dress up hay bales as like minions or like snowmen or whatever.
No, I'm not familiar with this.
They call it what the hey, and everybody makes, oh man, and it's like minions have totally taken over what the hey, and it's so like, it's like not, it is a bit disappointing, but there's some really great what the hey stuff. If you Google what the hey, H-A-Y, you can see some good Montana hay creations.
But I don't think that's what Emily's uncle is referencing.
No,
I think what Emily's uncle is doing, in all likelihood, is saying something that he has been saying to Emily May since she was like 0 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Like Chris always sings this song whenever he sees Henry. He sings Henry Atticus M&F in green. And until Henry was like two, he sang the actual song, if you catch my drift. Yeah. And then he has since then censored it. But like, it is so far, it's just a result of having spent a lot of time with someone as a baby and like singing nonsense songs to them and saying nonsense things to them to get them to sort of babble back at you. And so Emily May, What the Hay, is your uncle's way of trying to say, I love you in a way you can only imagine, that you cannot even fully glimpse, because for much of the period that I have been loving you, you were like, you know, semi-conscious. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to respond to it just by saying, like, I love you, Uncle Joe. Or maybe just be like, you know, Uncle Joe, what do you know? Like, maybe think of a rhyme that involves his name.
Good advice, John. I appreciate that. And now I feel bad that I don't have, like, fun names for name rhymes for Henry and Alice. I'll work on it. This question is from anonymous. Dear Hank and John, I'm a high school senior, and this week I was rejected from 4 colleges. I got accepted to a couple, but all the ones near the top of the list did not accept me. I'm trying to stay positive and remind myself that I have a wonderful opportunity to choose between schools that did accept me, but it's hard because all these rejections make me feel a lot of self-doubt. Any advice through this process would be really helpful. You both mean a lot to me. Crumbling under the weight of my own existence. Anonymous.
Hank, did you get into all the colleges where you applied?
Well, John, I only applied to 2. But yes.
Yeah, I mean, so I applied to like a bunch of colleges.
Well, here's the secret of getting into only 2 colleges, John. I did not apply to any good schools.
Well, I mean, the school you went to is a good school, but you didn't apply to any like Ivy League schools or anything.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to get into any place like super special. Yeah.
I think that where you go to college is important, but maybe not for the reasons that you think it will be important when you are a high school junior or senior. A lot of times, like, where I went to college was very important, but I also didn't get into probably the 5 best schools I applied to. And I'm very grateful for that, because if I hadn't gone to the college where I ended up going, I would not have moved to Chicago after graduating from college, and I would therefore not have met Sarah, and I would therefore have a vastly different life. So, like, when I think about what was really important about college, like, the classes were really important. I learned a lot of things that I've been able to apply to my professional and personal life. But the single most important thing was geography that allowed me to meet my wife.
Yeah. I mean, I also think that there are a huge number of great schools. There are a very small number of schools that will help you just through virtue of their reputation.
Right.
And I almost think, like, in terms of, like, that's kind of weird anyway. Like, if you're being helped just by the fact that you went to a school that people, like, recognize the name, that doesn't necessarily say anything about what you learned. But they're, like, overall, there are a lot of great schools in America that no one's ever heard of, and you will have no idea whether or not a school is good for you until basically you're done. But I think as long as you, like, come into it with the right mindset and the right goals, and, like, and want to take on college with sort of an open mind and a spirit of, like, this is exciting, and I'm going to make myself a better person for these next 4 years. Like, I think you're going to get a lot out of school wherever you go.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some colleges where it's easier to get a good education than others, because they're, you know, student-centered or learning centered or whatever, or easier to get a good education in different subjects. But I would argue that the vast majority of American universities are places where you can get a good education. So you're gonna it's gonna be okay. I remember being very disappointed about the places I didn't get into, although I got into the college I most wanted to attend, even if it wasn't the, like, technically the best according to the rankings. But also, I wouldn't put a ton of stock in those rankings. I think, you know, it's measuring the quality of an education is not something that numbers are particularly good at doing.
I agree, John. Do you have another question for us?
I don't, but I have a number of responses to things, Hank.
Oh, okay.
First, you might remember Sarah of the Girl Scout cookies. She wrote to say, "Dear John and Hank, it's Sarah the Girl Scout, and I wanted to let you know, you guys know that with your help, we managed to donate 78 boxes of cookies for the food pantry, which is really great." It's not 378, but it's still a lot. So thank you to everybody who donated and bought Sarah's Girl Scout cookies through the link that we read out loud. Cool. That has really made me very happy. Then a number of people wrote in on the topic of snakes, because we suggested, I guess, to a kid named Devin that Devin sneak a snake onto the campus of Devin's new college. That turns out to have been bad advice, at least according to a number of college administrators who wrote in to let us know that, in general, snakes are not welcome in dormitories.
Really? I feel like there's got to be like some dorms that allow snakes.
And I feel like aluminum foil must be chemically special, but apparently I'm also wrong. Susan wrote in as well to say, "Dear John and Hank, I don't have a question. I just wanted to thank you. This is one of the best emails we've ever received, Hank. I met a guy with a tattoo that says, morituri te salutant. Because I had just listened to the podcast where you explained what that means, I was able to show off my knowledge. And this Friday, we are going on our second date." Arrows and otters, Susan.
Nice.
I mean, it remains to be seen, Susan, whether it is proves to be good news or bad news that you are going on a second date with someone who has a tattoo that says "those who are about to die salute you." But I hope that it works out. I think it's a pretty cool Latin phrase, and I think, I mean, just don't feel pressure from us to get married.
That's definitely not.
We're okay.
You don't need to, just the date is good enough for us.
Yeah, John, we're delighted about the situation.
Can I read to you a quote from 800 different emails that we got?
Yes,
it's just a direct quote. It was in all 800 of them.
Uh huh.
John, OMG!
Yeah.
It's bath bomb, not bath ball.
Yeah.
Come on.
I know. I would like to apologize to my friends at Lush Cosmetics for calling their bath bombs bath balls. However, I would also like them to apologize to me, Hank. And I waited until the end of the pod to tell this story because I don't want to in any way damage the amazing reputation of my personal sponsor, Lush Cosmetics. However, one of the bath bombs. So I've been using these bath bombs pretty regularly, and they're fantastic. You can find a picture, in fact, of me using one of them on the Patreon at patreon.com/DearHankandJohn. However, one of the bath bombs, it was shaped kind of like a yellow and white pill, and I put it in my bath, and I was like, oh, this is so lovely. I am just having the most relaxing experience. And then at the very center of the bath bomb, there was this sort of silvery stuff. And I was like, oh, that's weird. God, what a great bath I'm having. And I had like a nice 30-minute bath. And then I got out of the bath. And
I love this story already.
My beautiful, lovely wife, who is not totally sold on this whole me using bath bombs on, in every bath thing, looked at me and said, "John, you are literally covered in glitter."
Oh, God.
And I was. I mean, not only was I covered in glitter, but I would say that I, like 5 days later, there is still a fair amount of glitter on my body. That stuff is sticky.
I'm not surprised. Oh, that's awesome. I love that.
We also got.
I love that. There's like there's like a glitter pocket inside of it.
Yeah.
Oh, there should be a special warning. The other day, John, this has started to happen to me. This is very unrelated, but I was drinking what appeared to be seltzer water, and then I started to feel like I had some caffeine, and I looked, and there was caffeine in it. It wasn't branded as an energy drink. It was like branded as like a low-calorie soda thing. And I was enjoying it. And like, you can't just throw caffeine and stuff and not put it on like the front label and say caffeine in this. And I also had a Clif bar that had caffeine in it. And you can't do that to a guy. I freak out. Okay.
That's just like having your entire body covered in glitter.
Except it's just my soul. That's what happens to me.
Former
glitter
Master,
soul is
former
with caffeine.
Former there. I'm gonna get in here at some point. Former Ning Master Tom wrote in to say, "Dear friends, a couple episodes ago, you answered a question regarding signatures in which John's old signature was brought up, and then Tom has a copy of Looking for Alaska from March 12th, 2005, which is like less than a week or I think 9 days maybe after the book first came out." And that has my old signature on it, and we're going to post that on the Patreon so that you can see what my old signature looked like. Second to last, we received several emails from friends or acquaintances of the 14th most powerful Canadian, Gerald Butts. An astonishing number of Dear Hank and John listeners know either Gerald Butts himself or are friends with Gerald Butts, or slow danced with Gerald Butts' friend Justin Trudeau when they were in high school. It's absolutely overwhelming, the number of people who know Gerald Butts. It makes me think that Canada is indeed one of those countries where literally everyone knows literally everyone else. And lastly, and
wait,
perhaps
you gotta give that best little note at the end of that one, John.
What is it?
That Gerald Butts, if you're wondering, really loves bruschetta. Or however that's pronounced.
I think it's pronounced bruschetta, but I'm not totally positive. However, that is a little bit of Gerald Butts trivia for you Gerald Butts fans out there. And lastly, and perhaps most importantly, we received the following email from Sarah. Dear John and Hank, Jeffrey Potaterson has become self-aware. Jeffrey Potaterson, who, if you're a longtime hardcore listener to Dear Hank and John, you will remember from a previous episode, after months of not accepting friend requests from literally hundreds of listeners, Jeffrey Potaterson has accepted all of our friend requests and has become like pretty excited about
his
newfound platform.
Yeah. Yeah, he posted, Jeffrey Potaterson is feeling excited, haven't been on in a long time, didn't think I'd become so popular. It's good. Yeah, I noticed when he added me as a friend, and then immediately I started getting messages from people on Twitter being like, I'm friends with Jeffrey Potaterson, Hank, it happened. And he's posting again, and
I'm just so happy for Jeffrey Potaterson. Hank, what's the news from Mars?
Oh, right.
I know the news from Mars this week.
Do you know which news from Mars I'm going to give you?
I hope it's the news where, while talking to an astronaut, President Donald Trump promised to get a human being on the surface of Mars by the end of his administration.
You know, that wasn't going to be my news, because I feel like that more what he's saying than, like, I'm going to get you to Mars in the next 4 years is, I plan on being president for the next 75 years.
No, he said he'd like it to be done in his first term, but it will definitely be done in his second term, which means it would happen by 2024, which also means that I'm going to throw this out there, and we don't like to get political on the pod, but I don't know that President Donald Trump has a great sense of what it would take to get a human being to Mars.
Of, like, what exactly Mars is?
No, I think he knows what Mars is. I don't think... I think he is a person who likes to make bold promises.
Yes, he does, yes. Yeah.
What's the news? Is that the news from Mars? It's great news.
That doesn't seem doable to me. I'll be honest with you. I'm not very optimistic about hitting my own date. But it's interesting that he'd just say that without, like, talking to anybody at NASA at all about where we're at with the Space Launch System, which is not ready to go to Mars anytime. But anyway, I guess I wish him luck. I was going to talk about... So building things on Mars is important, mm-hmm. because you have to have places for people to live, mm-hmm. and taking things to Mars is very hard. And so we would like to take as little as possible with us when we go to Mars. So we have now been able to, in the lab, create a fairly good substitute for what Mars soil is like, or dirt on Mars, uh-huh. or regolith or whatever. And they have been thinking, you know, it'd be great if we could build structures out of the stuff that's already on Mars. That way, not only, you know, do they have a place to live, but also we could protect astronauts from cosmic rays. And so, like, maybe we could make bricks from the regolith on Mars. And the, you know, the thought was we'd have to bring some kind of binder with us, or we would have a microbe that would, like, turn... Because on Earth, you can't do this. Like, you need a binder to make clay into a brick, or a bunch of heat, and et cetera. So we bring, like, a microbe that would turn, like, human waste into this byproduct that we could mix with the soil and then and bake it and turn it into a brick. But they found that actually, because of the iron oxide in Martian soil, if you just press it, if you just take a bunch of Mars soil, at least the simulations for it that we have right now, if you just compress it really hard, the iron oxide will sort of break down into like flat little sheets and then stick to itself because it likes to be with itself. And so it breaks down into like flat things and like tiny microscopic structures that will create a like a brick-like structure. And it requires, as far as we can tell, no extra ingredients. So you just have automatic Martian bricks, and all you need is to apply a fair amount of pressure, but the kind of pressure that could easily be applied by an electrical press of some kind. And boom, Martian bricks to build houses out of, which is exciting.
That is very exciting. You know what is not exciting?
Uh-oh.
The month of April. Hank, every month... Every football team has this thing where they, every football team in the whole world is like every month, like, let's vote on our goal of the month. Like, here are the top three nominees for goal of the month. Which of these amazing goals will be, our team's goal of the month? AFC Wimbledon has not scored a goal in the month of April.
still got that drought going. It's almost like they're like, well, we're safe, so let's just, yeah, it's fine.
They're enjoying being safe so much that they have now gone five games without scoring a goal. During those five games, they've picked up 2 points, both 0-0 draws, against one against Swindon Town, one against Peterborough. They lost 3-0 to Bradford City, a score that, from the accounts I could find on Twitter, seemed to rather flatter AFC Wimbledon. And and now they're about to play their sixth game of April. And hopefully, maybe, on April 30th, they will score, and then there will be a goal of the month. And there will not need to be a vote, because it will just be the one goal.
Maybe
it'll definitely be
two.
That one.
There'll be two goals, and you can pick one.
They could fight it out between the two goals of the month. Yeah, so, I mean, look, the great news, and it is really great news, I don't want to minimize it, is that AFC Wimbledon are safe. They are going to have another season in League One. The bad news is that if you could be judged on how you finish... Well, let's just say you shouldn't be judged on how you finish. One game left in the season for AFC Wimbledon, and it is against Oldham, another team that is completely safe and also is playing for nothing. So maybe we'll find a way to win it or not lose it or even lose 2-1.
So, John?
Yeah.
Are you going to be below the MK, whatever the name is?
Very likely going to finish below the franchise currently plying its trade in Milton Keynes. Yes, it's not inevitable. Milton Keynes sitting on 58 points, AFC Wimbledon sitting on 56. So if Wimbledon win and Milton Keynes lose, then it would happen. Otherwise, probably not. We'll see. We'll see. There is still something to play for, because I think that's would not be an insignificant accomplishment.
All right, John. What did we learn today?
Well, we learned that there's nothing special about aluminum foil. It's heat itself that's so weird.
We learned that if the people at the hospital put a name on your birth certificate, that's your name. And that's great. And you can be Emma if you want to be.
But also, according to Hank, you have to be regardless of whether you want to be.
I didn't say have to. I just said it's a good story.
Oh, it's a great story. We learned that you should never, ever, ever tell people that they are going to die while delivering them a pizza.
And we learned that drinking to excess is bad no matter what you use to do it with. John, Thanks for potting with me today.
Well, we're not done potting just yet, Hank, because we have to go record This Week in Ryan's, our hit comedy podcast that's available only via our Patreon at patreon.com/DearHankandJohn. This week, you know who we're discussing this week, Hank?
Oh, no, I didn't realize you had one.
Well, that's how it works. I pick the Ryans, and then you quickly read their Wikipedia pages while recording the podcast. This week, I've chosen to make it very hard for you by talking about Ryan Babbel, the Dutch footballer.
Oh, God.
If you want to ask us a question, you can do so at hankandjohn@gmail.com, or you can use the hashtag DearHankandJohn on Twitter, where Hank is Hank Green and I am occasionally John Green, but mostly Leon Musk for Earth or Sports with John.
This podcast is produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas and Sheridan Gibson. It is edited by Nicholas Jenkins.
Victoria Bonjourno is our head of community and communications, and our music is by the great Gunnarola. Hank, thank you again for podding with me, and thanks to everybody for listening. As we say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.